October 1st, 2018. Can you believe it's already October?
What?
I spent a lot of time trying to think of an LA-based October pun because there's always like Rocktober and Jocktober. And I feel like
classics.
Yeah, every show or like marketing campaign needs like an October pun.
Walktober.
I thought you might say that.
That is definitely taken.
Walktober, yeah, sure. And it started. Yeah, Ciclo Via, unfortunately, was yesterday in September on
There'll
Sunday.
Be another one.
Okay,
not in October though.
We have a lot of stuff this episode. We have Chris Roth from Ground Game LA. He's an organizer for them, and they're working on the public bank campaign. We talked about this a little bit. It's Charter Amendment B on the November ballot. To decide basically whether the city has permission to open a public bank. And so Chris will talk about that with us in more detail later on in the episode. Who has a good LA story from this week?
I think that you do.
I do have a really good one. Thank you, Scott. That's the correct answer. It might not be that good. It was very weird.
Bump set spike.
I went to my first Rams game. Which I don't really, I'm not a football guy. I don't think the NFL is like a great institution. I think it has its flaws.
Yeah.
But my brother-in-law asked if I wanted to go to the game. I went on Thursday. It was so fun.
Yeah.
We had a blast.
I heard YG was there.
YG was there. He performed not even at halftime, just like during a timeout. He just kind of ran on the field and started rapping.
Did you take the train?
I took the train. I took the red line to the expo line. But on my way to the red line, I see this giant In-N-Out truck. Not even like a normal size, bigger than one I've ever seen before.
I didn't even know they had trucks.
Like industrial.
Just for parties, not for like driving
this
around.
This was like an 18-wheeler.
Yeah. But this is like a semi.
It
yeah, what you're saying. Okay.
Giant.
Yeah.
And I see the like it's parked right by the homeless encampment right on Hollywood Boulevard and Hillhurst. So I'm like, what's going on here? I go over there and there are all these signs up for Johnny Nalbandian. I'm not sure exactly how you pronounce his name, but this guy who is running for Congress against Adam Schiff in the 28th district, I want to say. Yes. This is a guy who is known as Mr. Seafood.
By whom?
I believe he is self-appointed.
Okay.
But why would he have an In-N-Out truck if he's
title.
Mr. Seafood?
I know.
Why not have like a Mariscos type?
He wasn't there.
Oh.
There was really only one person manning this truck.
Are you sure it was that they were actually serving food?
So this is what happened. I went up because I was kind of expecting to get some free In-N-Out for some like campaign event.
Yeah.
And so I asked, where can I have some food? And they say, no, we are celebrating 1 year of campaigning because I guess he won the primary or he got second in the primary behind Adam Schiff. So we're celebrating by handing out free burger meals was the quote to people who are homeless.
Oh,
and you can buy a burger meal for $15.
What?
And the burger meal was a burger, chips.
They don't do fries. They don't do fries on the truck. I do know
Not fries. So I want to say like Cape Cod.
They don't have like, I wasn't at this event, but I'm familiar with the truck's offerings and they can't do fries because of like the quality control issues.
Really?
Yeah.
Chips.
But you would have to pay $15, which is like what, three times the amount
for a burger and chips and a small
and
soda.
You'd actually
I think
get
it's
fries.
Like probably five times. Yeah.
Gotta pay for the convenience of having the truck come to you, I guess.
So it was a fundraiser,
right?
Where they had, I guess, this pretense of they said they were gonna give away 200 meals to the homeless.
Burger meals.
But there aren't 200 people living in that encampment. There's like 20 people.
But like what is the, so it was a fundraiser for what, for his next campaign?
Trick. Yes. Okay. It was all the money was going to go to his campaign, and it was a trick to, I guess, people to wait in line and then get to the front and have them be like, it's $15
for
and hope people will just be like, well, okay, like I'm already here
to celebrate getting, I mean, you got in the top two, but you also got completely waxed by Adam Schiff.
Crushed.
Just beyond, there's not even a sliver of a hope.
He's a big Trump guy, Johnny Nalbandian, and I learned from his flyers that I was given when I accidentally went to his 1 year anniversary campaign event. And then I went to the game. Oh, I saw an interesting thing there. There were, as I was walking in, there were a lot of vendor, like hot dog and soda vendors. And there, a bunch of people standing around them in with bandanas over their faces and like megaphones and stuff. And I was like, oh, this is interesting. I couldn't tell if it was before or after some kind of action. And I talked to them and they said that they were just there to protect the vendors. Like when cops, this has been happening a lot more lately. I think the game before on that Sunday, I think there were a few like sweeps by the sheriff's department and like LAPD getting vendors out of like Expo Park for big events, yeah. I guess, is when they're really active. And so these guys were there to yell with bullhorns at the cops and to take video. It was cool.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's great. A security detail for vendors. So
that
was my
big LA story.
That's good.
What do you guys have?
Okay.
Scott wants to go last.
I don't really have a good transition is why I was hoping, but I will say my story begins in the same general geographic area as your in and out pop up.
You're all about the transition.
I'm a writer. This is what we do.
But you don't have to transition from the last article that people read.
So I was at I spoke at an event at Hauser Wirth downtown, this awesome art gallery that is in the arts district that where they took over the old Pillsbury factory and turned it into this. It's more than an art gallery because it's like a restaurant and a bar and it's open to the public. You can actually walk through it during most of the day into the night and you can take your kids in there and let them run around and there's chickens and these wonderful gardens. What? So yes, chickens. They don't touch the art, but they have these little salon things in their garden, which I got to speak at. And, the event was about urban ecology and urban wildlife. And I met this woman named Beth Pratt who works for the National Wildlife Federation. And she's the one who wrote like the amazing book about P-22 and is this
P-22, the lion, the mountain lion.
You can say cougar or mountain lion. I thought I had to correct people and say, you have to say mountain lion, but you can say both, which I was very relieved to hear. She brought this cutout of P-22 and stuffed animals and these trading cards that she brought for my daughter, of all the cougars of LA. Wow. Yeah. She has a huge tattoo of P-22 on her arm with like the Hollywood sign. Cool. She's badass. So I met her at this awesome event and she gave this really inspiring talk just about how LA is actually really leading on wildlife and urban ecology and protecting all these species. We have this amazing biodiversity in our city and we're leading is what she said. And we are building this wildlife bridge that's going over the 101.
Right.
You guys know about this?
Yeah,
where they, it's like the cougar/mountain lions can go mate with each other and they won't be inbreeding like they are now because of the freeway.
This is what I'm most fascinated about with the mountain lions, how they are this kind of abomination of nature.
Yeah, we're not. Where, I can't go into more detail about
this
that.
Is why
that's not my story.
It surprises me to hear that we're leading because the only thing I ever hear is about how damaged the ecosystem is in this area or that a mountain lion has been killed.
Yes, they get killed all the time. It's super tragic. But yes. I think her argument was just the fact that the city had made this a priority and was doing a lot more to protect, like what the like Natural History Museum does as with their a lot of their efforts and a lot of other groups. And a lot of other groups are doing, I think, other really important things about protecting certain species like Heal the Bay, groups like that. So, yeah. And tree people, you know, all these places are actually doing a really good job in pressuring, I think, our city government to care more about these things, which I thought was really interesting, too. I was surprised as well. But so she, you know, gave this whole pitch for that we live in this city that's, you know, bisected by a mountain range and we have a mountain lion living in Griffith Park and this is so amazing. In any other city they would have shot him and we can all just go access this great park. So I took my kids and I got on the dash bus that goes to Griffith Park, goes to the observatory.
Cool.
It runs till 10 p.m. every day now. You can jump on it near the intersection of Hollywood and Hillers at the red line, right? So you just jump on this bus, you get to bypass all the other cars going up there. It costs way too much money to park up there, as it should, because no car should be allowed in that park anymore. And then we should just have tons of shuttles, you know, getting people around the park as needed, including near the Hollywood sign. We went after school, we got on the dash bus, we went up to the observatory, we learned about planets and looked at a telescope and sat outside and like smelled this amazing chaparral air, watched the fog roll in, had some food and got back on the bus and came back down to the city. And just, you could do that any night and go see some stars or a planet or hear somebody talk in the Leonard Nimoy Planetarium. And it would be awesome. It's good. We should all do that.
Had your kids been up there before?
They've been there a few times, but yeah. I think it's special to go there at night because usually we hike up there or something during the day. But you get there so fast too on the bus.
And your son is a huge La La Land fan, so going to the observatory must have been really
exciting.
Actually,
he just learned to walk, so I just let him go in like the deep space area where he could just roam. There's a lot of room.
Probably looks a little bit like Ryan Gosling tap dancing at this point. Yes,
yeah. Got the same look on his face.
Okay, so this will thrill you. My story is a good transition from that.
Okay.
Because it's also about public space in LA, but in the sense that I spent the past week not here. I was in Chicago, obviously for our last episode.
Yes.
Recorded from Chicago, but...
Were you surprised to see they have Stan's donuts everywhere? The one Stan's Donuts that we have in yeah. Westwood is like, for some reason, and the first one was in LA in Westwood Village. And for some reason, it's like David Hasselhoff being huge in Germany. Kind of.
Right.
This is just one little donut shop from LA that is huge in Chicago.
And we went there without knowing actually that it was an LA chain, because you lived in Westwood.
Yeah, and I used to go there all the time.
We just had no idea. And then it's like all over the wrapper, like, we brought this from LA. And we're like,
it's so weird.
LA staple. Okay. Well, anyway, so
it was good.
That was very good. Got a blueberry cream cheese donut. That was memorable.
Decadent.
Yeah. I will not make it out to Westwood again until the Purple Line opens. So I'll have to just savor that in my memory. Anyway, so we spent a lot of time our last night in town going around different public spaces in downtown Chicago, and kind of just got me thinking about public space in Los Angeles. Alyssa brought up Griffith Park, which is an amazing public space, huge, the largest urban park in the country. However, I generally don't find it to be super accessible. We live very close to it now. This podcast is a very northeast LA,
yeah, unfortunately, LA, tough to shake that
bent to it. However,
two of our stories were set at the same intersection.
but I was thinking about the cultural center that I went to when I was in Chicago, which is architecturally amazing, but it also is filled with like public art displays. Local artists, it's like sitting galleries where you can just actually, it's almost like being in a park, but you're just indoors in a space that is intended to be available freely to all Chicagoans. Mm-hmm. And that's very cool. Like, I feel like we in LA get accustomed to not really having a huge amount of public space readily available at our disposal. And it got me thinking about what is actually near me that I could go do something similar to that. There are very few parks. We use Hollywood Forever Cemetery, which is not a park, as a park, but we have all of these private quasi-public spaces that it doesn't really feel the same. And I just came back and I was thinking about that, and it's something that I hope, you know, we passed Measure A, which was the park measure.
What's up with Measure A? What are we seeing, like a status report of like what we got? A new playground at my park. So that was good.
With Measure A money?
I don't know. I'm guessing. Yeah. I mean, it's a nice new playground.
I actually have no idea what's up with Measure A.
We should check up on like what is actually happening. Like, I feel like we don't know.
I agree. But we have, we have money
to continue with our Northeast LA bias. The park by the Silver Lake Reservoir got totally redone too.
Oh yeah.
That might've been,
it's like
money.
A similar playground design. Maybe they just got a contract with this new playground company
with that bouncy kind of like surface.
Yeah.
Yes.
Don't ask why.
I think they're getting rid of sand.
Tested the surfacing on this playground.
I don't think we have sand anymore. Anyway, that's
my big thing though is more public space. That's definitely what I came back from Chicago feeling like we need more of it here.
Nobody went to the big Garcetti party. Nobody went to Garcetti Hard Summer Electric Daisy Carnival.
No, but I...
Well, people did go. Nobody went.
Disappointed. I thought one LA story
invited.
Would be that
I wasn't
we
invited.
Went to...
I'm actually
that we,
banned
that
from
someone,
entry.
Like took ecstasy and went to Garcetti's big party.
Anywhere that Garcetti is the MC, I think that I'm not allowed to enter.
Garcetti hosted a party with DJ Khaled and Jimmy Kimmel offer $100,000 each to a bunch of state Democratic parties. Those states were Iowa, New Hampshire, Nevada, South Carolina.
Coy.
Very
really
subtle.
Playing hard to get.
And then I think Minnesota, Michigan, Ohio, Oklahoma, and maybe one other. California was one. He was generous enough to give California $100,000. But yeah, I just had no idea that it was so blatant that he's like throwing money at the state Democratic parties of the first four primaries for 2020. It just seems like there could be a connection there.
There could be. Yeah. I mean, this is so interesting to me in the sense that he's like almost brown nosing the elected officials. Is that the goal? To,
I guess he feels like he has to get in with the state party officials or something to
right.
before
like,
he
yeah,
launches.
Yeah, so they
his
get
campaign.
In on the midterms and then they're indebted to him forever.
Yes.
But he still has to win the primary, which is very difficult. It's a tall order for him because his name recognition is very low.
No,
not
but
after this party, Scott.
And I think that like giving this money to the state parties, I think he hopes will help him get more recognition when he announces and he goes out there and all his new friends in the state parties can take him to the right, whatever fish fry, like the thing that he needs to go to.
True,
tells him which
like,
eating contest is most important.
There are like
the best use of his time.
Democrats in Iowa, right? So you can meet them all in a couple evenings. And I'm sure that when DJ Khaled has his next track with Justin Bieber, Quavo, and Lil Wayne, Garcetti can maybe sneak a feature in there. That would probably do real good. I don't know.
We have a few more stories we want to talk about, but first I specifically want to apologize for something we talked about in last week's episode. This podcast really hasn't matured until we've fully stepped in it and have to apologize for it. But last week we were talking about specifically the issue of conservatorship of people who are homeless and suffering from mental illness. Sometimes being given treatment by the state without their consent, sometimes with the consent of next of kin, but something that they didn't sign off on because they weren't personally equipped to be able to do that. As I started talking about this, I was thinking in my head, like, you are going to screw this up. Stop doing this. And I definitely didn't articulate even what I was trying to say properly. I was talking about having gone to the city council and seen a woman who seemed to be suffering from mental illness who was threatening the city council, and then going outside and seeing another woman who I said was having an episode. And I said that there was no recourse for these people. First of all, I didn't want that to sound like I wanted them to be just swept away, like taken care of in some way. What I meant was there was no recourse for them to get help. Like the only way they're really attended to is once they hurt themselves or hurt somebody else. And so that's what I was sort of lamenting. But you have to be clear about these things because so many people do think they should just be swept away to another state or whatever. So I think it is good to be clear. A listener responded to us, gave us a great response. Her name is Stacy. Her Twitter handle is @_southernish_. And she works in
severe mental illness.
Yeah, I think she's such
permanent severe mental illness. I think she is an advocate for them. And she basically said, first of all, I was definitely making the assumption that someone who is afflicted with mental illness is not necessarily suffering. It's not necessarily like an agonizingly painful experience for them, something that needs to be urgently treated, basically.
Right.
Which I hadn't really thought about too much and I think is important to consider as we talk about forced medication on people. Stacy said they have these psychiatric mobile response teams. That's really the only thing that's available right now that can go out and treat people in the field. But they can take hours, she said, to get folks for assessment because there aren't enough of them. Often if it's determined that the person needs to be placed on an involuntary hold, there is often not a psych bed even available. So this is actually the thing that I was trying to say initially. I think it's unfortunate that we don't have enough of these services that aren't the police to deal with this problem.
But we should be getting more because of everything we voted for. To add more people. And I know that some of these groups are staffing up.
That was part of HHH money,
yeah.
Right?
I mean, we should. And
Housing H's services.
Yeah, I think we are seeing some. I mean, I personally have had more success having the police not come and having people who are actually seem like they're there to help with some people that we've been trying to help in our neighborhood. So I do think it's changing. I do actually think it's changing. But I think it's also education telling people not to call the police. Like, people are literally calling 911 and saying, there's somebody I don't like out in front of my house.
Sure.
Yeah. And that's the biggest problem.
We should also mention the portal, the URL of which we got wrong last week. A lot to apologize for. You can go to la-hop.org.
I think I had that right, actually.
No, I think you said .com, and so did I.
Oh.
It's la-hop.
But the dash I had right.
You did have the dash.
Yeah.
Okay. la-hop.org. And then you can enter a person's information. And then I think it's not really for urgent situations.
No, but that's
a 72-hour turnaround.
Yes. Yeah, they'll call you back and you will know that people are helping. So I would definitely recommend it.
Yes. In the news, a judge ruled, and this was a lawsuit filed by Huntington Beach in Orange County, that the charter cities in California do not have to follow the state's sanctuary law. The sanctuary law was put up by State Senator Kevin De Leon earlier this year. Talk a little bit about what the sanctuary city law did, Scott.
So basically, this was a response to Donald Trump's election, where California was taking on a role as a sort of a defiant role as the opposition to Trump's hardline policies on immigration. Specifically targeting a wider swath of the undocumented population for immediate deportation. Mm-hmm. We've talked a lot about this in terms of ICE, and they are really have become the cause célèbre on the left for resisting the way that ICE operates as a law enforcement agency. One of the ways that they actually find people to deport out of the country is in collaboration with local law enforcement agencies. There have been lots of reports of people who have been detained by local police being released and immediately picked up by ICE, subsequently re-detained and then deported from the country. It seems like a lot of the time there is some correlation between having a police record, even if it's for even if it's an arrest for a minor infraction, that then that information makes it into the hands of federal law enforcement. So SB 54, mm-hmm. I believe it was the sanctuary state law, forbade California cities from sharing information of that type with federal law enforcement. This was really decried on the right as it was kind of like the right was saying, this is proof that California is not interested in law and order, because why would they not want to cooperate with a law enforcement agency. Mm-hmm. From the state's perspective, though, this is a way of ensuring that there is an opportunity for people that are actually residents of the state of California to be treated fairly and equally, and that if there are law enforcement agencies that come into contact with Californians, that we are putting strict limits around how their information is going to be handled.
But some cities took offense to the top-down approach taken
specifically in Orange County.
Local state. Control. Local control.
Yes. Some sun poisoned the Huntington Beach surfers who will like are rich but also somehow surf all day and will slash your tires if you like right. try to go to their beach.
Basically the Lost Boys of Orange County.
I like sun poisoned.
They sued to be able to have the right to cooperate with federal immigration authorities. A judge ruled in their favor and basically said that no city that has its own charter, no charter city, has to conform to SB 54. There's two different kinds. Scott, this again is something that you have done a lot of research on. The two different kinds of cities, charter cities and general plan,
general law
cities.
Yeah. So the distinction between the two types of cities in California goes back to the state's founding in or rather its admission to the United States in 1850.
Okay. I don't know if we have that much time.
Well, it actually hasn't changed a huge amount since the late 19th century. So basically a charter city is one that has adopted a city charter, more or less the municipal constitution that governs the rules for how things are going to be administered locally.
LA City has one. We'll talk about it later in this episode because we are considering amending the charter.
Yeah,
Alyssa's
charter
transition
amendment.
DAR
okay,
is
good.
Going
but off. It's a later. It's like foreshadowing more.
Yes.
Yeah.
Foreshadowing DAR. Yeah, so the second type is general law cities. General law cities in almost every case are taking on state prescribed rules about how administration is going to take place locally. And so the difference primarily is that in California, charters have the ability to set their own rules for whatever they want to do, irrespective of what the state law happens to be, except in matters of so-called statewide importance.
Which the state was saying this is a matter of statewide importance, but the judge disagreed. Allowed the charter cities their own authority on this issue. So LA County has 88 cities. 24 of those are charter cities. I didn't know exactly which cities in LA County had charters. Most of the big ones do. LA City obviously does. Long Beach, Santa Monica, Palmdale, Beverly Hills does not. West Hollywood does not. There are a bunch that don't. One thing that we haven't really talked about on the show is whether or not LA is a sanctuary city. A lot of people accuse it of being one. Basically, people on the right say it's too much of a sanctuary city.
Sides,
people
yeah.
on the left say that it's not enough of a sanctuary city. No one is really happy with the current arrangement. I think Mayor Garcetti is partially responsible for that. He has seemed to express a lot of confusion about what it means. If you ask him, is LA a sanctuary city, he'll say it's not really clearly defined.
I've heard him and other people say it's a city of sanctuary.
That I love. to be like this here, I got it.
No,
we'll say it's a city of sanctuary. It's technically not a sanctuary city.
And that actually fits with the broader pattern of responses that Mayor Garcetti has had when pushed by activists about why not if you don't think that a sanctuary city designation means anything, as he said he's not really sure, why not just say you are one? If it's
many mayors with very similar laws to what LA has
and
have stood up and
similar political aspirations,
they very proudly said this is a sanctuary city. You know, come and get from
like
my
I'm
cold dead hands.
Remember the march, the families stay together march. Families belong together march. He
keeping
said
families together.
I can't remember that. I it was a. the horrible, one of many horrible marches
family
we had.
Good.
We had to have that. We're now marching all the time because of these. I do. It gets people walking. But he said, let's let ICE do their jobs. Yeah. Do you remember that? He said that like
we
in
have
his
to
speech,
tell ICE
right?
to do their job. Yeah. And people were
or
like,
we need to let
no.
ICE, let's let ICE do their jobs or whatever. I mean that. And people were just like, what? Like in the crowd. So it's kind of like a, I mean, it's another one of those things where you really just hope people would just come stand up and say, yes, we are doing this. We are this. And I'm not going to let ICE do their jobs, to be honest. And I don't really understand why you wouldn't say that in a city like Los Angeles.
Well, so Garcetti's point is that, and this has been a point that has been made by other Democratic presidential hopefuls, but it is essentially that he thinks that there is a role for enforcing border immigration, immigration across the border. He doesn't think that what is currently happening is a valid instance.
He thinks they're doing too much of their jobs.
I mean, I guess essentially he thinks that the current administration is using ICE in an intentionally, willfully cruel way, which I agree with. However, where I would disagree is that I think that that is somewhat intrinsic to the function that they're intended to fulfill in our society. And also, I think as the mayor of a city like Los Angeles, where 10% of the population is non-citizen, at least 10%, you are somewhat, I would say, beholden to those people to take a stronger stand and not, you know, dissemble about whether or not the syntax of sanctuary city versus city of sanctuary is a meaningful distinction.
But at the same time, are we currently a sanctuary city? I would probably say no. LAPD does a lot of joint operations with ICE. The relationship between the sheriff's department and ICE has been very cozy at times. There was a period where the sheriff's department was saying that they weren't telling ICE who was getting released from the prisons. But then it turned out that not only were they hand delivering lists of people who were being released from the prisons, they let ICE set up this little workshop in the inmate reception center with 5 computers so they could see everybody who was coming out of the jails, cross-reference with their list of who was undocumented, and just be standing right there with a big net, basically.
And ICE does have beds in county jails, you know, across the county, the Adelanto jail facility.
Where they detain people en route to deportation centers.
Right, which is run by the county sheriffs.
Yes. We want to get into a little bit of the teacher strike news. LAUSD and UTLA, the teachers union are mediating with the state right now. LAUSD offered a 6% raise to the teachers retroactive to last year. The teachers said no. They're looking for a 6.5% raise retroactive to 2 years ago, and they want class sizes reduced by a lot more. They want more teachers and nurses hired. LAUSD offered this for some schools, but they said not enough. So we'll talk about that more in the future. Let's go now to Chris Roth from Ground Game to talk more about some of this public bank stuff right now.
So I want to introduce our guest tonight, Chris Roth, who's an organizer with Ground Game. Ground Game LA, do you say, or just Ground Game? Ground Game is doing great things for the city on the ground and on the airwaves with us tonight. They also have a podcast.
We do, yes. We have a podcast, and we also have knock.la, where you can check out all sorts of news that other news sites wouldn't necessarily publish. Like once the LA Weekly disappeared, we are trying to pick up some of that slack.
Yeah, that was kind of our thing too, but there's room for everybody.
Yeah.
Well, I just want to say, sorry, there's room for everyone.
Yes.
So we have you here tonight because we're doing this series where we talk about all the different things that we are going to be voting about in like a really short amount of time. Like it's coming. So we want to talk about this idea of a public bank.
You're not going to say it's prop it like it's hot.
Oh well, okay. I'll do the song.
This is a measure, though.
But yeah, we got to come up with a measure.
That's true.
That's okay. We need a different like.
Yeah,
I need Hayes to work on this.
I'll spend the rest of the segment. You guys talk about the public, and I'll come up with a good.
So it's technically it's a charter amendment.
Yes. Okay.
Oh yeah. Okay. Right. Much easier.
It's super weird and makes for like really difficult times on Twitter.
Sure.
You're like, this is using up all of the character. Although now it's not as much of an issue, but it uses up a bunch of characters to write instead of like Measure B or like Prop B or anything like that. It's like, no, you have to put charter amendment. B.
We should note that it's a city.
It is, yes.
It's a city measure, charter amendment. We'll get back
Chris,
into
can
that.
Can you start by explaining charter amendment B for our listeners?
Sure, yeah. I can actually pull up the text of the charter amendment in case anybody really wants to know. So it literally just says, Municipal Financial Institution Charter Amendment B. Shall the city charter be amended to allow the city to establish a municipal financial institution or bank? That's it.
Huh. Pretty short.
So simple.
That might
fit in a tweet, actually, if you put it.
So literally what we're talking about is giving the city government the authority to establish a public bank. It doesn't actually do that. If you vote yes on Charter Amendment B, you're not establishing a public bank.
That is very correct, but also missing a little bit of it. It doesn't establish a public bank. It actually just gives the city authorization to begin the process. Mm-hmm. Because if you look at like the CLA reports about this type of thing, which is actually cited in the LA Times editorial that we're going to get to.
Yeah.
They talk about how this is supposed to be costing so much money and doing all these things. And it's this blank check and you can establish this bank with no other rules or anything to follow it up, which is just completely not true. Like if you look at the CLA report, you see that there's going to be a lot more things that have to happen. But the one thing that absolutely will have to happen is that the Senate and the Assembly here in Sacramento are going to have to consider legislation to create effectively a new type of banking charter.
Okay.
Because the type of bank that we're proposing to create is not something that's actually authorized anywhere in the California Constitution at this point. Like it's not something that you can legally create.
And let's go back to the very basics. Sure. Sorry.
Yeah.
What is a public bank?
Thank you.
So a public bank is very much like, think of healthcare and how you want to have like a public option. A public bank is the same kind of a thing, but for financial work. So you can have different flavors of public bank. And if you look at like the Sparkassen system in Germany, those are public banks that are very much like your savings and checking banks that you would first start your account with when you're a kid. When you move into a new neighborhood, you would open up your account with the local community Sparkassen bank.
But it's owned by the city or the state or whatever.
It's a municipal bank. So okay. I believe those are like their equivalent of county owned.
Got it.
But it's the people who live in that area are the ones who own it because that's the whole point of it being a public banking institution. And it's actually because of the Sparkassen system in Germany, that's why they were able to invest as much money as they did into their solar infrastructure and why they are now leading the world, I believe, on like a per capita basis for solar generation in a country that is renowned for its sunny blue skies.
Yeah, it's a very dark place and a very dark people. okay, so what are we doing now? What does the city do now with all its money? They take in a huge amount of money from taxes, all kinds of...
Basically, the only financial institutions that are legally allowed to handle bank accounts of the size of the revolving accounts that we have here in the city of Los Angeles are the typical big Wall Street banks like Bank of America, Wells Fargo, JP Morgan.
The city has to put their money in a big institution like that.
Correct, because they're the only ones who have the correct levels of insurance and everything else to have to deal with it. However, Wells Fargo was recently disqualified from dealing and holding accounts for the city. There was a partial divestiture in there. They're still moving more of it out, but they're like, it wasn't that the money was immediately taken out. It was, they had to wait for a new bank to come through and do like fill out the RFP and go through that whole process.
What is the new bank?
I have not.
Some other big bank.
Yeah, it's another big bank. Okay. Like this is the whole point for why you want to create a public bank, is because once you divest from one of the big Wall Street banks, you then have to turn around and put your money into another of these big Wall Street banks.
Right. But there must be a good one out there.
Yeah. Good luck finding one.
So we're talking about basically all of the public finances. Correct. For the city of Los Angeles, which the city budget is multiple billions of dollars.
$9.9 billion.
Yeah. Okay. So it's just short of $10 billion each year. Those monies are being held in specific accounts. They need to be kept separate for whatever purpose they're going towards. So we're talking about potentially hundreds of millions or more dollars being held in individual accounts and going in and out, being managed by city financial advisors. That's why.
Eventually, yes.
Yes.
So that's, if you look at what the LA Times wrote about, they're basically presuming that that's what it's going to be on day one.
Right.
But there's nobody in the public banking movement here in California that's proposing that that's what we do.
Well, let's go to the LA Times editorial. Sure. Let's let them speak for themselves.
Right.
It's only fair that way.
So the LA Times editorial board put out an endorsement to vote no on Charter Amendment B.
It was very strongly worded.
It was extremely strong.
That I thought was pretty shocking, that I didn't expect at all. The headline was, Charter Amendment B is one of the most ill-conceived, half-baked ballot measures in years. Vote no. I don't remember the last time.
It's so interesting because it's so short. It isn't, how could you be, the wording itself is so.
Right.
I think it's actually because it was so short, that's why they said it was half-baked.
You didn't think about, like, you should have had more.
Well, I mean,
sentences that were.
That's apparently, that's the requirement to make it fully baked, is that you add more verbiage.
But it is. But the proposal is very simple, which is just that it would allow the city to do this.
Correct.
The LA Times came out against it. So what I think we should do is just kind of read through their editorial and let you respond. Sure. Whenever you want to jump in to the stuff that they said, because I will say, the case for a public bank is not made in this editorial.
No.
So let's let you do it right awesome. Now. Okay. Since credit markets froze and Wall Street banks collapsed a decade ago, sending much of the global economy into a tailspin, progressive activists have pushed cities and states to take their money out of Wall Street's hands and put it into publicly owned banks. Do you dispute that?
No, they're right on that.
Okay. Anger over the Wells Fargo fraudulent account scandal and frustration over the lack of banking services for marijuana businesses have added to the momentum for change.
To put in a quick caveat with that one, the momentum surrounding anything related to the cannabis business has really, that was something that was brought up at the beginning of this whole process, but it's something that got dropped pretty quickly because there's some reluctance at the city level to deal with the cannabis issue, because that's something that's a much larger issue that the state is much more well-equipped to handle.
Oh, that's interesting.
So, yeah.
So my perception, I think the perception of a lot of people, is that Herb Wesson, the president of the city council, is very supportive of this measure. And one reason for that is because he wants LA to be able to put the money that it makes from the weed business into a public bank. Is that...
That was initially part of the plan, yes, but that's the cannabis stuff has really been just pretty much completely dropped from anything related to the city level, and that's being reserved for things that'll be handled at the in the state assembly,
because it's too complicated with the state and local laws.
It's more in terms of how you interact with it from a federal level. Huh. So, like, you know, folks like Javier Becerra and, you know, Fiona Ma and all them are more equipped to handle that than the, you know, the attorney general anybody here in the city of LA would be to fight, you know, Jeff Sessions when he decides to come and start seizing assets.
Javier Becerra is the attorney general of the state. Fiona Ma is the treasurer
She's
running for treasurer.
Running for treasurer. Yes. Okay. Let's continue. Government leaders in Massachusetts, Maine, San Francisco, Oakland, and Santa Fe, among other places, have all considered or are still considering creating public banks. Now some Los Angeles officials want to do it too. The city council has put a measure on the November.
I would like to say
you'd like to dispute even that.
No. I just want to say that actually, the interesting thing to me is that it's implying that LA is less competent to do these things than San Francisco, Oakland, or Santa Fe. Like that, just
kind of interpret it that way. You're very sensitive.
No, I think that's in. I mean, it's just now some. It's very dismissive. I think. Okay. I don't know. It's setting up that.
But it is trying to say that like no one's ever done this before, and there's no way that LA can do this either.
It says the city council has put a measure on the November ballot, Charter Amendment B, that would amend the city charter to allow for the creation of a Bank of Los Angeles. What exactly would this bank do? We don't know. How much would it cost to start a public bank? We have no idea. Why is this measure even on the ballot? Good question.
I mean, so I can understand where they're coming from some perspectives.
Really?
Because it is a very short and very simple ballot measure, which leaves it open for a lot of interpretation. And you know, my personal wish was that city council would have made it a more clear and more rigidly defined measure that would include, you know, some of the social and environmental structuring of the bank that we're really hoping to see instituted when the bank charter is actually produced. But it's the thing about it is that this, like I said, this is the first step. So there's going to be an ongoing debate. And really what it comes down to, like they mentioned, San Francisco and Oakland are currently pursuing, they have feasibility studies and panels that have been assembled to figure out whether or not this is something that's going to work for them. And so what they're doing is they're spending a whole bunch of taxpayer money to do this kind of an assessment of the feasibility and then the structuring and all the rest of it, without really necessarily probing to see whether the voters are on board. Mm-hmm. So what this one is, what Measure B here, Charter Amendment B, is really doing is it's basically offering a referendum up to the folks here living in the city of Los Angeles to determine whether or not they think that a public bank is something that's in their best interest. So we have city employees that have been doing some of the feasibility studies with the CLA, the Chief Legislative Analyst yeah. Office. And they've come out and they've said that, look, there is a massive problem with the current banking structure here in the city. There are, 600,000 Angelenos that are either underbanked or unbanked entirely outside of things like payday lenders. And they, I mean, David Jetty, who is the chief legislative
director,
Director, yes. Yeah. Thank you. So he actually points out in his response, talking about how the CLA basically has said that half of all Black and Hispanic Angelenos are unbanked or underbanked. So half. And it costs these people real money to be dealing with a situation where they don't have access to actual bank accounts. And so instead of asking, what the CLA report said about that, or saying maybe we should be looking into a solution for this, they say, why is this measure even on the ballot? And it's just not a fair question. Like the reason why this is on the ballot is because the CLA office came out and said that we need to change the way that we're doing banking. And every report and every study that's been done is basically showing that there is a pretty convincing argument to be made that says that a public bank is going to save Angelenos a ton of money. I mean, we're paying $1.1 billion every year in interest to Wall Street banks.
Like fees?
No, just interest.
Oh, wow.
The fees are another $170 million.
Do you have a preference, because you said that cities like San Francisco and Oakland are going essentially the opposite route that we're going in terms of figuring out what the technical feasibility of having this municipally owned bank would be first. Clearly, that is the preference of the LA Times editorial board. Do you think that it makes a difference which way you go, whether or not you get the popular approval first or hammer out the details? Does that make a difference to you?
I mean, from a democratic perspective, I'd rather get the buy-in from the populace first, because this is something that's going to be a huge, complicated, multi-generational, institute that's going to be part of the backbone of the legislative process and governance here in the city of Los Angeles. It's going to take some time to get that all figured out. And rather than just spending tons of money and then finding out that nobody in LA is actually excited about this, it's much better, in my opinion, to go to the people and ask them first, is this something that you want us to pursue? And from that perspective, it's every single group that we've gone and talked to about this, everybody gets excited about it. Every single, you know, Democratic group that we've gone to or community organizing group that we've spoken with, everybody gets excited about the idea of a public bank because it's not something that they've really, you know, had in the public consciousness before.
Well, let's answer some of these questions. Sure. They say, what exactly would this bank do? What are some of the things that it could do?
So the simplest thing is that it could handle the deposits and, you know, the day-to-day financial transactions of the city of Los Angeles.
And individuals as well, or that's so an option.
Eventually we could expand it to include individuals, but when you start talking about covering individuals in terms of like commercial banking and like brick and mortar institutions, that genuinely is going to be adding a lot of overhead and a lot of capital requirements to start setting up all those branches and expanding. Yep. Right. Mm-hmm. So what we're suggesting is that we model it off of the Bank of North Dakota, which is something that they're going to get into later, and they're going to dismiss it outright because they don't think that it's applicable.
Because North Dakota is not good enough. Like, what's up with that?
I think it's mainly because they think that North Dakota is small and that this bank was established like 100 years ago.
Agricultural interests or whatever, right? Like, that the original?
That was the initial, right. But it
which was also the initial reason for starting the Bank of Los Angeles.
Right.
So the Bank of North Dakota, if you look at it, is a very conservatively managed bank. It doesn't make risky investments. It doesn't do credit default swaps. It doesn't do all of these things that are trying to, you know, make an extra few bucks, well, not a few bucks, an extra few million for the hedge fund managers every year. Like, they basically go out and they invest in the infrastructure in the state of North Dakota. They invest in the small businesses in the state of North Dakota. And they also just they have an actual mechanism where folks in communities can recommend a type of project that can get financing from the state. And then the state is able to offer that financing at basically a subsidized rate where the interest rate is below what any of the commercial banks can offer.
Okay.
So what the proposed Bank of LA would do is basically follow that kind of a model and start small and grow from there. So we can start with as little as like a $10 million capitalization and then just expand.
Okay.
And we've got accounts with $10 million sitting them all over in the city of LA.
And what kinds of things, like a big Wall Street bank takes the money that it has in its assets and it invests it in all kinds of stuff. Could the Bank of LA do that as well?
It could, and it would. And the beauty of it is that we would get to determine what those investments would be. Like, we don't know right now what they would be because we're going to go to the public and we're going to say, what is it that we should be investing in?
But what do you think would be cool?
I think it'd be really great to, you know, not be investing in fossil fuel extraction.
Okay.
Right. So that was a big thing at the climate summit. Like, all these city leaders like got up there and they're like, we're divesting from fossil fuel. Like, they were, they were taking their, you know, city accounts or whatever away from, you know, investing in these types of things. Mm-hmm. So that could be part of that, this movement.
Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely. Yeah. So like this, the Public Bank LA organization, like, it sprang out of the Divest LA organization, which sprang out of the Dakota Access Pipeline protest at Standing Rock. Mm-hmm. So like, this is all, everything about this is all very much connected. So the Bank of Los Angeles, when it's established, would be able to not invest our money in those kinds of extractive, expenses and very profitable industries, unfortunately. And we'd be able to invest in things that we want, like green energy production, expanding the, you know, housing supply, changing our transportation infrastructure, adding more bike lanes, getting more electrified buses out there, putting more trains on the track for Metro. All of these things are investments that we can actually bake into the charter for the bank. And we could also make it so that, you know, any new infrastructure spending that is being done, you know, has to go through union shops, has to mandate a floor for the wages and, you know, good working practices that make everybody safer and happier to be living and working in the city.
And this is money that currently we're just handing over.
Absolutely.
To Wall Street banks that we don't get to use at all.
$1.1 billion a year.
Let's continue with the LA Times. They say Charter Amendment B is one of the most ill-conceived half-baked ballot measures to come out of City Hall in years, and that's saying something. There's been no formal study, no plan, nothing of substance completed to determine whether a Bank of Los Angeles is even feasible, much less a good idea. Is that true?
No.
There have been studies.
Yes.
The city legislative analysts did. They took a pretty long time, I think, to come up with a study.
Well, they've got a report from December 8th, 2017, and they have another report from August 27th, 2018. And so, if you look at those reports, they are they're slightly skeptical about how much it's going to cost to implement a bank, but yeah. they were also running off of the same kind of a study that Massachusetts had done that you'll get to later in this op-ed about that this presumed capitalization for a Bank of Massachusetts, where
just the money you would need to start it up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So what they did to get to that number, if my understanding is correct, is they took the amount of money that the Bank of North Dakota spent back in 1919 to establish their bank, scaled it up for inflation, and then multiplied it by the number of people to scale it for the population.
It's pretty basic.
It's very basic, but it also doesn't take into account any change in scope in terms of what it is that you're looking to do, mm-hmm. and the fact that you can actually just establish a smaller bank and have it grow over time. So it's they throw out these numbers without really having any concrete reason for having selected them. Mm-hmm. And the people that are conducting, people who are invested in the outcome of these studies are oftentimes the people who are going to be profiting from maintaining the status quo.
Let's continue. Even Council President Herb Wesson, who is leading the push for the public bank, admits there are a lot of unanswered questions. To Wesson, this is an opportunity to have a citywide dialogue about the issue. Fine. But why not have a dialogue and answer those questions before putting the bank on the ballot? So this is what you were saying about process. You guys prefer to get people excited about it, get buy-in first, and then figure out exactly what kind of bank people want.
Absolutely. Because like I said, this is going to be a multi-generational institution that we should do correctly from the outset.
So that's what they get at in the next paragraph. They said the reason so few localities have moved ahead with the public bank idea is that they soon discover it's a really expensive, complicated, and risky business. They talk about the Massachusetts Bank, how they decided it would take $3.6 billion to provide the bank enough capital to get started. Mm-hmm. It would also take changes to state and federal law, along with changes to the city charter to get permission to start a public bank. You Correct. Seem to be aware of that.
Yeah, and that's a very fair assessment. Yeah. But they're kind of... They're basically assuming that like there's something like 15 or 17 cities and municipalities around the country that are currently pursuing this. We have the California Public Banking Alliance, which is out there right now with we've got teams in San Francisco, in Oakland, in Santa Barbara, here in LA, and we're all working together. And I think also in Sacramento, all working to craft this this legislation at the state level. So there's a genuine interest throughout the state and throughout the country to pursue the creation of these public banks. Mm-hmm. And it's just flat out wrong to say that everyone is looking at the numbers and saying, well, this doesn't make sense. If that was the case, then why is everybody still pursuing this? Like, it just doesn't make sense from a factual perspective.
So they question whether it would be a good deal for taxpayers. They say a public bank runs the risk of political interference, as elected officials might put pressure on the bank to make risky loans to and investments in favored individuals, causes, and communities.
So if you look at like the Bank of North Dakota as far as like a template to be used for the governance and the running of the bank, they have there's like a board of directors that is like the governor. I want to say the attorney general and like somebody else that is also an elected official, and they are effectively sitting and overseeing this bank, and it's not making it's doing exactly the opposite of what the LA Times is suggesting would happen. So there's no reason to make that logical leap from saying, oh, if it's a public bank, then it's going to be beholden to public officials. We could set up a governing structure very similar to what they do again in the Sparkassen system in Germany, where they have effectively like a tripartite arrangement where there are elected officials that make up 1/3 of the seats on the board. There are professionals from within the bank and work people who work for the bank make up 1/3 of it. And then 1/3 of it is just, you know, the citizenry. So you have basically you've got three different branches that are all sitting together on the board, and they're made up of different stakeholders who are all able to then have their concerns heard at and be having a say in the running of the bank. And there's no reason why we wouldn't have that here in LA unless the LA Times got their way.
That's so, I mean, Hayes can say I'm sensitive, but this is kind of what
you
mean.
You sound a little sensitive about what I said before.
I am. But this is exactly what I mean about the tone of this article. Yeah. Is kind of shot through with this anti-exceptionalism, where other places can make this concept work, but then it very snarkily says, like, good luck with that.
It says good luck with that.
About city council being able to set up a governance structure that would be somehow, like, non-corrupt. So it seems like the basis for the argument seems to be like, maybe this would work somewhere else, but it definitely won't work here.
And the thing that's bewildering to me is they talk about a bank making high risk loans to well-connected borrowers. What do they think happens at a big Wall Street bank?
Describing Wall Street right now.
I mean, like the idea that this doesn't happen in the current system, and that, like, if the biggest risk that we face is making high risk loans to well connected borrowers, that it seems like kind of a wash.
At the end of the day, right?
I mean, like, what do we have to lose? I guess, like, if by voting, why would you vote no? Like, that's my question.
You like having more middlemen in the equation and giving money to Wall Street.
But, like, how could that be? Do you see what I'm saying? Like, so why don't we just vote yes and explore it?
For a little bit of background, the only person who volunteered to write the opposition statement for the ballot, like the ballot, the voter information guide, right? So we, the Public Bank LA, we had Ellen Brown wrote the support statement for the voter information guide. And then Jack Humphreyville from Jack Humphreyville from City Watch, he's the one who wrote the opposition statement.
Unbelievable!
And so when we put out our support,
he was available.
He like wrote in and volunteered because of course he did.
This is a guy. Do you want to give a little context on Jack Humphreyville? Come on.
Well, it's related to one of our other ballot measure discussions or proposition discussions, because he's been a very active voice in a lot of the anti-development and densification.
He was very pro Measure S last year.
That makes sense.
He works for a online publication called City Watch LA. Mm-hmm. And he's just kind of a guy that is generally kind of grouchy about a lot of different things, but public banks, I mean, like, this, it doesn't seem to be part of even his purview to me.
He seems like the kind of thing where
he's from a banking family.
And also, I mean, City Watch exists to suggest that, like, city council is not to be trusted for anything.
Basically. Okay, that's true. So you might say that, like, okay, I don't trust these scoundrels to put together a bank. This is all sounding like It's a Wonderful Life or something like that. It's like Potter's bank is just not going to be, I'm going to George Bailey's bank, like, kind of thing. Right. So why would you not just vote yes? I don't understand. Like, I really don't. Like,
I agree with that. So yes, vote yes on Measure B. Now, but when Humphreyville wrote his statement of opposition, he got like one of his former coworkers or something to sign on as like, yes, this is a good statement, versus the statement in support of the measure. We had the head of the police union, the head of the fire union, the fire department union, Bauman, the head of the California Democratic Party. We had 10 supporters who are all big name, heavyweight individuals.
These are not like, I have to say, like, these are not like progressive firebrands,
the head
right?
of the police union and DSA joining hands.
Right. Like, but at the top of this article, we talked about how this was like a progressive cause. And I was going to say, like, the LA City Council is not a progressive body.
Thing about this is that the roots of the public banking movement are from a very progressive background, right? But it also is extremely appealing to like fiscal conservatives, because what it does is it represents the ability of taxpayers' money to go. If you look at like investment spending, right? When you take out a loan to fund like a bond measure, you're going to be paying interest over the course of that loan to repay it back. And you end up basically spending double your initial, what your initial balance mm-hmm. was going to be. Like, if you take out a loan for, $1 billion, you're going to end up paying $2 billion over the course of repaying it. And all of that money that you're paying as interest right now goes to Wall Street. But if you have a municipal bank, then that interest goes to the municipal bank. And then if the city and the residents of the city are the shareholders in that bank, then that interest is returned, less operating costs. Those profits from the interest are returned back to the general fund or back to whatever lending programs that we feel like having, and it continues to grow from there.
It's so, like taking out a loan from your parents, kind of, when you're just like, oh, you know, it's all coming back.
Well, yeah. So it's basically you get to just pay this money and it comes right back to you and you can spend it again. So from like a fiscal conservative perspective, this makes a ton of sense because it means that your taxpayer dollars are going to go twice as far whenever it comes to infrastructure spending. And I think just genuinely, it doesn't really matter where you fall on the, you know, the spectrum of progressive versus conservative. Like, everybody seems to hate the Wall Street banks unless you are a Wall Street banker. Like, nobody is friendly with what they've done because Wells Fargo was just censured and fined so much money from the opening of all of these fraudulent accounts, right? They were targeting people who are in easily like precarious neighborhoods in terms of their social standing. Like, they're the elderly, the people who don't speak English as their native language, anyone who they could really just take advantage of. They were just opening up all these accounts. And so those are the folks that profit from this if we don't go that direction.
And that doesn't even cover all the kinds of stuff they invest in that we as taxpayers in LA have no say over whatsoever.
Martin, baby.
Which we would in the case of a public bank. Maybe I'm naive about the city council. I don't see the political will there to try and ram something like this through under the cover of darkness. I don't know. Maybe like
it doesn't seem it's not the Olympics.
They've been working on the short-term occupancy stuff with Airbnb for 3 years and they still haven't figured it out yet.
Yeah.
Like, there's no way that they would ram something like this through and try to get it without us being able to at least see what it is and then come in there and start shouting at them.
Yeah, that's how I feel. Let's see what it is. Let's pursue it. Let's go down this road. I'd say vote yes on B for sure.
Same.
Awesome. Yes. Yes on Measure B.
Well, thank you, Chris.
My pleasure.
Thank you, Chris. I learned
Thanks, Chris.
So much. He's an actual rocket scientist. We didn't talk about that. He's an actual rocket scientist.
He was. Now he's just,
what are you not? You force to forget everything that you knew about rocket science. When you are a rocket scientist once, you are that forever.
Now he's going to be a public banker.
Yeah.
That's what we need. We need more.
I feel like the more former rocket scientists we can get into politics so that they can remind us that politics is not rocket science, the more of that we can get, the better.
People that have been paying attention to the news of this week are probably listening to us and saying, like, they're not going to talk about the Sherman Oaks, like, riots over the housing development. They're not going to talk about all the Prop 10 stuff that happened this week. We are going to talk about that.
And also, we're not your puppets.
Yeah, well, who are you to say it's a free podcast? We are going to talk about that on Thursday for a crossover episode simultaneously released across multiple podcast feeds that we're doing with the California housing podcast, Gimme Shelter, hosted by Liam Dillon of the LA Times, Matt Levin of Cal Matters.
We promise that we will have a better pun for a title, I think, than theirs.
That's the question. Do we do a shared title?
Do they do puns? Do they do pun titles?
Their titles are fun, but not necessarily
they
puns.
They use a lot more emoji, I will say, in their like sharing of their show descriptions, because they have their avocado of the...
Yeah, we need to pick a symbolic emoji. Like a,
yeah.
So we'll think about emojis. Maybe we'll take pitches on that. But we'll be back on Thursday for this special episode that will show up in both your Gimme Shelter feed and your LA podcast feed. It's going to be nuts. So please look forward to that over the next 3 days. And we'll be back on LA Podcast.